Okay, good afternoon, or it's still morning, right?
Good morning.
Good morning. I got into working with Humic Products after being here last year and met with Dana and Renee here, and they kind of talked about it, and so it kind of got me involved in that, and I started a few studies there in western Kansas looking at Humic Products. So I want to start with a challenge that what has been will be again, and what has been done will be done again, and there is nothing new under the sun. That was a statement by one of the wisest men that ever lived. And I want to start with a challenge you with another quote that says, "Man can conquer nature only by obeying her laws, and to obey those laws, he must know them." And we kind of hear a lot of the talks earlier, and they kind of talk about in reference to a lot of those things, which I'm probably going to kind of echo a lot of that and continue on that trend. So let's start. Let's learn from nature. My background is soil chemistry, so I start from a soil chemistry background. So if I start with look at nature and how nature makes the soil. Nature used simple ingredients, actually. It used water and it used CO2, two simple ingredients. And if you get a soil, if you have CO2, which is there in abundance, if you have no water, pretty much nothing happens. You just have a mineral and nothing is happening. Let's say you get a little bit of water. You start add a little bit of water to that system. All of a sudden, you start to have nutrients becoming available. What happens when you start applying more water? You get more nutrients available. You're changing that soil. It's starting to leave with that iron, that aluminum, silicon. And as you move to where you get an abundance of water, like where I'm from in Jamaica, you start to end up with these iron aluminum because you start to move a lot more of that nutrients out. So that's kind of how nature does it. But how is nature doing? Nature is actually combining water and CO2 to make a simple acid, which we call carbonic acid, which actually is doing a lot of the work. So what we see here is nature kind of runs automatic. Nature does it automatically. So it's kind of you riding an elephant. When that elephant decides what direction it's going to go, you really cannot tell it to go another direction. So simply what nature's been doing is it's been dealing with acids as an exchanger for metals from the beginning. And that's what we call chemical weathering. So that's a real simple process nature been using. So we want to mimic nature. Another way to look at it is a concept of soil testing. How do we actually do soil testing? That whole idea is, if you look at all our extractants, with the exception of the Holson test, they're all simply weak acids. So we're just mimicking what nature does, taking an acid, mixing it with the soil, and extracting the nutrients. So what about humic and fulvic, keyword acids? And so if we look at it, and I probably just echo in here, just showing some of the features of it in terms of the colors and as well as some of the parameters there. I won't spend much time on that. But the first thing is they're weak acids. So if we start there, they're weak acids. So that tells us a lot about what their functionality as weak acids. What an acid does, it's going to donate hydrogen ion into solution and leave a negative charge on a molecule. That's what it's going to do. With that, it starts to operate as a chelate. And we call these nature's chelate. So their functionality is that chelate when it creates those negative charge. So let's just look back at, so a lot of times they talked about functionality. Looking back to the literature, looking at some studies that actually looked at use of these fulvic and humic acid. And a study that was done back in 1989 in China, and this was a field study that looked at wheat. And what they found that applying fulvic acid actually increased yield to 97% of irrigated compared to an irrigated control. Now the field trial looked on processed tomato and they found it increased yield by almost 11% compared to the control. I'm an extension guy, so I like field work. So I know that there's a lot of literature on greenhouse stuff, but I prefer to look at how did it work in the field. Now they looked at peanuts that increased yield by 722% over the control when it was fertilized with iron that was enriched with peat as well as iron with EDDHA, which is a synthetic chelate. Just want to add this point that compost originated from plant residue or manure are known to have high levels of humic substance. So that's why we're seeing more and more research these days with, that they're looking at mixing organics with the synthetics, and they're seeing much better yield response from having those mixtures. So that's becoming pretty interesting. But one study which really caught my attention was this study that actually looked at humic acid on wheat. And what they did, they grew wheat in water. Then they grew it in water plus humic acid. They grew it in an Oakland solution, it's a fertilizer solution. And they're growing it in a fertilizer solution with humic acid. And then they measured fresh weight for the root and for the shoot. They used the water as a control. So water is at zero. Then they look at for water plus humic acid, they saw a 58% increase in root growth and a 36% increase in shoot growth. For the fertilizer solution, they saw a 96% increase in the root growth and an 85% increase in shoot growth. Then they combined the fertilizer solution with that humic acid and saw a 119% increase in that root growth and a 111% increase in shoot growth. So what that tells us, that this is clearly showing us from this perspective that growth was enhanced by using humic acid. More so root growth than shoot growth. And this is actually, this was done back in 85, but we're seeing more and more study that are confirming we're seeing this root growth increase from application of humic acid. So what about in Kansas? So I decided to mess around with humic acid, so I applied it to wheat, corn, and alfalfa, and on sorghum. On some of these, this is the first year, so, and we have some unusual event in Kansas this year, so some of these, my results, may be even repeatable. But, and some, I don't have the data yet because we're still waiting to harvest and still have samples to be analyzed. So let's look at wheat, irrigated wheat. And you guys probably read in the news, in western Kansas, we had a massive snowstorm around April 30th. In May 1st, some areas we had up to 20, 24 inches of snow that covered the wheat crop. Some of the wheat crop was around head in at the time. And so what I did, I said, talking to Dan and Dana, I said, they said it responds to stress. I said, this is the best stress condition we could have covered in snow for a few days. So if humic acid works, this is a good chance to see if it's really going to help with that stress situation. So I went out and decided to apply three products and apply them at the recommended rate and half the recommended rate. So we went at high and low. And I had three replications and we had some small plots, 1.5 meters by 3.5 meters, and we sprayed it at about 187 liters per hectare. And that's so after a couple of days, we had to wait till the snow was all gone, and then the plant starts to regrow, starts to come upright. And we like to say it's kind of, the wheat grew back like with an elbow. So it got some shift broken stem, so it's like an elbow sitting on a table. So it was a lot shorter than normal. And so that's kind of the stage we applied our humic acids. And what we found looking at my results, grain yield on our y-axis and our different products on the x-axis, and we did this at 90% significance level, 0.01 significant level. And what we found was we found two products, GrowMate as well as IJUM, at the low rate we found to have significant yield increase. We're actually, in summary, I say it this way, the low rates of GrowMate and IJUM actually increase our grain yield by about 12%. And again, I said this was after a snowstorm. Conditions were just different, and based on being convinced by Dana and Dan, I decided to do that, and we found that we did see some yield increase from that application. But I think there is more research needed in regards to the rate of application of humic products, because we did see that response with those lower rates. At those higher rates on some of the products, we actually see somewhat of a yield decrease there. Another study I looked at, and this was one I kind of piggybacked on. They've been doing this irrigation study on corn, different irrigation levels. It's been there since 2000. And so I just, Last year, I have a grant that looks at, we're looking at it trying to figure out what's limiting our yields. So we're looking at it from soil analysis versus plant analysis and trying to see if there's a nutrient factor that's limiting yield. So what we did is this year, we found last year that iron was our main limiting nutrients that was limiting our yields on our high pH soils. So we went in and we actually, our plan was to do in-furrow application of our iron plus our humic products, but we found out our equipment wouldn't work. It wouldn't allow us to do that. So we already had everything set up to apply around 13 pounds per acre. And so we decided, well, we got to do something. So we decided to broadcast it. Bear in mind, there was a study that was done back in 2003 that shows you need at least 80 pounds per acre of iron sulfate to get a response in corn. So we're putting on way less than what is even was recommended for us to get a response. And we had the study had six irrigation treatments, and I'll talk about that later. Kind of what those are, I have here, it's an inch per day, but it's kind of like an inch every 4 days, an inch every 6 days, an inch every 8 days, an inch every 10 days, and a dry land treatment. And so we compare that to the iron and as well as no iron. What we observe there, with that low rate plus the humic acid, we did find that we saw an increase in iron concentration in the leaf analysis. And that was mainly for those high irrigation from the every 4 days to around the every 8 days. Once we start to get less irrigation, we did not see much of a benefit to it on that. But what was also interesting, which we keep observing, was not only did we increase the iron, but we start decreasing that manganese level, which was really very interesting to us there. We also measured NDVI, and we measured at two growth stage at V3 and as well as V6. And even from early on, we started to see a difference in terms of just, you know, those reflectance in terms of greenness. We were seeing that the iron, having that little bit of iron, was making a difference. So one thing where we started to become interested was the iron manganese ratio. We're starting to, from our previous work the year before, we realized that where we're seeing chlorosis, every time the manganese level is a lot higher than the iron, we're starting to see iron chlorosis. So we're starting to really try to look more closely at iron manganese ratio. And what we found, again, kind of some similar to what we showed with increased iron, was that we're seeing that with the iron, applying that iron sulfate, we're able to increase that iron manganese ratio. And most studies shows that you need an iron manganese ratio greater than 1. At least it has to be greater than 1 in that pond. So we still didn't really overcome our problem, but we feel the rates we applied was probably too low, and that's probably next year, that's an area we'll be looking at, is trying to identify a rate that would allow us to overcome this challenge. Our next crop was on alfalfa, and so we applied humic products and as well as boron to alfalfa. We applied it at alfalfa at 6 inches after the first cutting. And we had untreated, we had boron with 10%, as well as Enersol with boron as at 4.67 gallons or 1 gallon and half a gallon, as well as Enersol at a gallon, as well as Hydroume. And we applied those to our plots of 0.9 by 1.5, and that was in a complete randomized design with 4 replications. And there we have to fence our alfalfa. If we don't, the rabbits will take care of it for us. So we'll get, unless we'll be catching rabbits and getting weights, we won't get any data. So for results, looking at yields in tons per hectare, it's kind of hard to, the metrics, I'm an extension guy, so I go with English units. But what we did find was we did see a response. We found where the untreated Hydroume again showed to be pretty well, working pretty well for us. We saw that it did increase yields. Most of the others, we didn't see a significant difference there. But what we did see is that Hydroume increased alfalfa yield by about 4 tons over the untreated. And we feel that we need more long-term study, would offer a much more clarity for benefit of our humic products for our crops in Western Kansas there on alfalfa. And the other study, I don't have data I don't have data for that, but I can just show you what that study looks like in terms of its treatment structure. It has 10 treatments, and what we're looking at is we're applying humic product with and without urea, and we're applying at 56 kilograms per nitrogen per hectare, as well as 112 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. And as well as we're applying nitrogen with, without, as well as we have a high rate of 224 there, so kind of having two check, want to make sure nitrogen was not a limiting factor there. And that study is 9 meters by 30 meters or 30 feet by 100 feet plots, and designing a randomized complete block design with full replication. And our urea and humic products were applied at 3 to 4 leaf stage. And that's here you can see on my graph, you kind of see it has those, we had some lodging issues, and what happened is this area used to, it had probably way before I was even born, it was decades, long time ago, it used to have a terrace, and they leveled it for flood irrigation, and we're still seeing some effect of that in terms of, we feel that's a soil effect, and so we'll be analyzing soil texture and a lot of soil, other soil properties. Dan and Dana will be doing that for us. Yeah. So the second component to that study, being I'm an extension guy, so I tend to always bring a portion of my research to the farmer. So actually we have a farmer who has one of the treatments, and he's looking at using GrowMate, and he's applying that with 100 kilograms per hectare of nitrogen, on as well as without, as well as he's applying it 60, as well as with and 60 without. Those plot size are about 35 meters by 790, and complete randomized design replicated 3 times. So we're hoping that with these, on these plot size at field scale, we'll be able to start to get a good understanding of what these humic products actually does in Western Kansas. So with that, any questions?
Yeah, we have time for questions, so we have about 3 minutes. Go ahead.
So a quick question. I'm sure this could be answered with a quick look online or a legal or something, but can you mix these humic acid products with fungicides or other products?
That I don't know. I haven't tried that. The ones that I work with, I mixed that was a dry product and mixed with dry fertilizer that I've done. But in terms of with, but I think you, for some I've mixed with, actually I did have a school and I mixed it with UAN, with nitrogen. And my goal there was mainly to look at burn. I had a farmer that told me he could put it on and reduce burn on his soybeans, and I didn't believe him. So I wanted to test it, so we had a demonstration, and we applied, and we actually did see some reduction on burn. So I do know you could mix it with fertilizers. In terms of fungicide, I'm not certain. I haven't tried that.
How can you go with the UAN, for example? What was the rate
of
the UAN without the burn?
We put on 1 gallon per acre, and we were using, and we saw better results with the fulvic acid compared to the humic acid. And so you made a liar out of me. So that's why you, most times you, with farmers, you gotta test it.
Okay, we thank you. We thank all the speakers.